Alrighty, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. Today, we decided to switch things up a bit, change the tempo, change the pace. We decided to not have a guest today and just talk a little bit about the markets, recap what we've been seeing. We're sending PizzaMind off to ETH Denver, so get some forecasts for March. But before we dive in, I wanted to give you guys a little bit of our outline for today. We're going to be talking about all the regulation that's been coming down the pipeline from the SEC and from all over the place, basically. We're going to talk about AI coins and how they've been having a tremendous start to the year. And just we're going to talk about the start of the year in general. I think it was one of Bitcoin's best months ever. And in fact, it was the best January dating back to, I think, 2013 or 2012. So a rock and roll start to the year. A lot of liquidity conditions have been changing. We'll take a look at the charts. Everybody loves the charts. So if you guys are listening on Spotify, we highly recommend you check out our YouTube channel where you could actually see the visualizations of what we're going to be talking about and why we think Bitcoin's 25K resistance is going to be falling pretty soon. I really want to talk about Solana, which has gone down yet again. I think it spent another full like 18-hour cycle of downtime, and Anatoly, who's the founder, basically said we don't really know what happened, and so they're still figuring it out. And then lastly, PizzaMind and I will interview each other a little bit and do a recap of our Digital Currency Summit, which we aired last week, which had, you know, dozens of the top experts in the crypto space. And I think a lot of you guys who are listening now joined us for that event, the Digital Currency Summit. So we're going to talk about some highlights from that. PizzaMind, does that sound pretty good to you?
As long as I'm not the one on the hot seat. But yeah, that sounds like a great...
You are, my friend. You're on the hot seat.
You know what? Let's do it anyway. That's fine. I'll cool off once I get to Denver.
There we go. Yeah, man, let's kick things off. Basically taking a look here at what just happened to Binance. Binance just, you know, yesterday or the day before that got hit with some basically pretty harsh words that turned into actions from others. So the SEC saying that, you know, Binance is not doing the right things by their investors and by their stablecoin holders, and they're rehypothecating things and not being transparent and disclosing what's backing BUSD and their commingling customer assets and all the... I mean, these are all allegations, right? And I don't want to perpetuate anything saying that these are facts, but these are a lot of allegations that the regulators are coming out with Binance. And so in the wake of this, Coinbase delists BUSD, which was a stable coin that had a lot of backing by Paxos, who was like a regulated New York state financial institution. BUSD was, you know, a pretty, you know, decent standard for a long time, and now it's being delisted. And so I'm curious, PizzaMind, to get your thoughts on this. I think my thoughts are that it's just going to, it's going to, that gap is going to be filled by other regulated stable coins like USDC, or, you know, maybe even, Tether or even DAI, which is a decentralized stable coin issued by Maker. But hey, BUSD is just one of dozens. And so it's not a death knell by any means. I think that this whole sort of, let's call it a coinfiscation, right? They're trying to choke off Binance from the American market in pretty much any way possible. I saw that in the wake of FTX collapsing, which they're trying to prevent another FTX from ever happening again, is basically why they're trying to choke off Binance. The CME has taken on a huge amount of open interest and volume since FTX fell. So all these regulated kind of American derivative exchanges, basically CME is like the main only one, they're growing their market share a tremendous amount. So there, while some institutions cave and roll over, and while they try and get rid of Binance and other players will fill the gap. But, you know, Binance is pretty much got a target on their back from American regulators, and this week solidifies that.
Yeah, so let's turn back the clock to 2017 when Binance was born. They were born in China, by the way, and they basically ran roughshod all over the crypto industry, becoming the fastest unicorn to $1 billion valuation on Earth of all time.
Was it $1 billion in profit? Yep. Or was it $1 billion valuation? Or there was some billion.
I believe it was a valuation, but either metric, they set some kind of record for growth.
It was incredible.
It was. And Binance got that way because they simply listened to their customers and built what they wanted to use. CZ's been one of the greatest conduits towards crypto adoption in all of crypto history. And then regulation came in, started sweeping over the West and then Europe, and then starting to make its way over to Asia. China banned all kinds of stuff. Binance left China, kind of moved around, not too sure where it's located at the moment. They were in Malta. And then they said, okay, we're going to try and do things the quote-unquote right way, rather than building such a vast ecosystem to replace the traditional financial system. They decided, all right, we're going to try and play ball with it. But this is the lesson that I'm taking away from everything going on, is it doesn't matter if you've broken the law or followed the law. It matters what your relationships are with the lawmakers more than anything. So whether or not Binance has actually done anything wrong or broken any laws in whatever jurisdictions that are applicable, it doesn't really matter, because they put their best foot forward by having their stablecoin minted by Paxos, a New York regulated entity that has the strictest code of conduct pretty much anywhere in the world. You know, you could argue Switzerland or maybe London are on that level, but New York, you have to, I mean, you're under the microscope right there in front of everyone for all to see. And everything was fine for years. Or was it? Because they created Binance US. And Binance US went through CEOs like trick-or-treaters getting candy. So there had to be something wrong behind closed doors for such a potentially lucrative venture to just be so poorly mismanaged that no one wanted to touch it.
Yeah, one of the reasons that I saw why Catherine Coley, who was one of the Binance US CEOs who has since left, basically, the implications were that there was some money that was moving between Binance US accounts to a trading firm kind of owned by CZ that was like offshore, that was making markets on Binance US. And so the allegation was, like, I think it was $400 million that had moved from one of Binance US accounts to Changpeng Zhao's trading firm. I think it's called Merit Peak. And this wasn't authorized by the CEO of the company. She didn't even know what was going on. And so it was like basically breaking down this illusion that Binance US and Binance International were in fact separate entities. So kind of, again, on the back of all that stuff, the Voyager acquisition by Binance for $1 billion is getting stopped, is getting thwarted by the SEC as well. That just came in again, I think like last week or earlier this week, that deal is no longer allowed to happen. And again, I think this is all, you know, I want to move on because there's so much to talk about, but this is all exemplary of the deteriorating relations between America and China, for better or for worse, right? Like it's obviously for worse when global relations deteriorate, but you could see it happening with the war and all that kind of stuff, and with Taiwan being this independent nation that is now basically going to be subsumed by China, and America doesn't really like that. And so there's going to be a lot of new policy that comes out. And I think Hong Kong and China are also starting to enact positive crypto policy. So there's a big tone shift in the market as America kind of cramps down, Asia kind of loosens up. We'll see. But Binance.
You're referring to, in case you haven't heard, is in June, retail investors in Hong Kong are going to be allowed to trade crypto. That's big.
Yeah, and Hong Kong is always a testing ground for Beijing, right? The capital of China. So if laws roll out there first and society gets comfortable with things there first, we then roll those into Beijing and China. But moving on, a lot to talk about, Pete's AI. It's big, right? ChatGPT, everybody's been talking about it. I've been playing with ChatGPT, man. I've been asking all sorts of questions. It's like, you know, the new Google. It's the new Siri. It's the hot new little assistant to do anything. And a lot of coins have been riding the wave. Namely, one of the coins that was in our Crypt Nation model portfolio for any of our subscribers who've been following our trades and following our portfolio in Crypt Nation, right? I mean, we had AGIX in there for a long time. That thing is up at its peak from this year. It was up like 1,400%. It's settled down now about 800% up year to date. A lot of other coins, though, like, you know, Fetch AI have been doing well. What do you make of this whole situation going on?
We've been watching AI coins forever, and they really have yet to have their day in the sun as an entire sector. We've seen certain one-offs take their moonshots, like AGIX, like Ocean. Ocean was one of our best performing trades ever. But yeah, there's still a lot out there that are quietly building, and it takes years and years and years to build a competent AI. Much, much longer than building a DeFi platform or an exchange. So there's still some real amazing gems out there that you might be able to find in our AI portfolio if you're a member of Crypt Nation. We've done a lot of research and put some gems in there. So check that out. If you haven't, CryptoRevolution.com, I think, is the place to go to get started there. But yeah, I think artificial intelligence is going to be part of our everyday lives. And I was just thinking about how I could use AI over lunch to simply upgrade my time zone in my Calendly. If it could just connect to my calendar, realize when I'm taking a trip, and update my event availability, it would be so much easier. And that's something that AI could simply do with a connection to Zapier. So there's many personal assistant AIs out there nowadays, not just ChatGPT. I remember in 2018, I was scheduling appointments with something called X.AI, which was a personal assistant that was handling emails and could respond to just about anything in terms of scheduling. But we've already come so far ahead. AI basically flies planes now. It's going to drive our cars pretty soon. And I think there's going to be a lot more good that outweighs the bad. Just as long as you leave AI in a position to make recommendations rather than unchecked decisions, I think society is going to be fine.
All right. Yeah, I'm with you. I think that there's a lot of definite applications. I think it's interesting that, you know, people have put these AIs out into the wild, and many people were hesitant to do so. Like, you know, Google and Microsoft, there was this whole ethical dilemma of like, if we release this to the wild, like it's so powerful, it might get answers wrong and pose as being correct. And there's a danger there, and how do we censor it and all that kind of stuff. And so there's going to be a lot of policing around AI.
Yeah. Excuse me. But so check this out.
Yeah.
The way it's going to be kind of related to crypto is there's a new concept called a digital twin, where you would hold an NFT that is essentially an AI bot that's scouring your social media and your emails and whatever else you give it access to, intentionally, mind you. You have to share yourself with this AI, and the AI is essentially going to become a digital twin of your personality and your beliefs and your values and your interests that can then go and participate in the metaverse and make friends for you, interact with others for you, and essentially act like your digital twin and bring back opportunities, potentially get you in trouble as well if you're someone like me. But that's one major way that you're going to see AI and crypto begin to intersect with the metaverse as well. It's going to be this very interesting triad of new technologies coming together.
Absolutely.
Did you guys see that a AI model got into a bank? Like the voice, there's the way you can log into your bank, right? Like you have your passwords and all that, and sometimes they do voice verification. An AI model copied somebody's voice and got into their bank account.
Wow. I did not see that. I do see people like using a ChatGPT to like fight legal bills or like fight like legal battles, basically. and like asking this thing for free. Like, somebody was like, how I saved like $107,000 on legal bills by getting advice from ChatGPT, which I think is like basically probably exactly what they don't want you to use ChatGPT for, to like get medical advice and legal advice and all this kind of stuff. Like, it's not there to really replace the job of a doctor, but just to, I don't know, supplement knowledge. But I did see that. Did you guys, totally switching gears, see that Solana had yet another outage of like 18 hours, I think?
Yeah, so this downtime of Solana is actually a feature rather than a bug for them to do upgrades and correct problems and stuff. But when no other blockchain has this kind of expected behavior, it just looks really, really, really bad to have anything offline. But I mean, Amazon's services, Amazon Web Services, they take their servers offline for updates. Same thing with every other major company in the world. Servers go offline for maintenance. In the normal IT industry, it's completely normal. But in blockchain, because it's decentralized, distributed nodes that should be able to operate on multiple different versions independent of each other, that's what really strikes a rare when an entire blockchain goes down and services are offline. So this is going to be a huge detractor to developers that are building on Solana, especially now as these virtual machines for Solana apps are going to become available on Cosmos, are going to become available on Ethereum layer twos. It's going to be a lot easier to switch off of the Solana mainnet pretty much anytime that's necessary, but I think you're going to really have to be on both if you're going to be working on Solana at all. But it's definitely going to cause a lot of pause when developers are going to consider building on Solana at this time, if this is to really be an expected feature, not just now, but going forward into the future. Having your business offline for half a day or 2 days is just completely unacceptable in this day and age.
Yeah, I'm with you. TiVo, what do you think about it from the from an outsider's perspective, seeing, you know, somebody, you know, have a network just go down consistently? Like, are you going to trust that with your money?
Two part. One for pizza, because you guys are the ones that educate me. So when it's planned to go down, is that something that they advertised? Is like, hey, we have an outage? Like, yeah, there's outages all the time in software, but it's usually planned and then they send out, you know, notice.
Yes, usually it is planned and the validators will all get together and coordinate this. But there are some things that I think what's happening now that is not planned.
Got to give a shout out to our guy Blockchain Boy who was on last episode. He was shitting on Solana. I felt you two guys pull back. You guys pulled back because we don't, you know. But he was really adamant and not a big fan. I don't know. Maybe he's having every dog has their day. So
maybe he had a little premonition there, a little foresight. I would be interested to hear that clip again that we talked about Solana. I mean, for me, it's like, it's good technology. It's got a lot of institutional adoption, but it just has absolutely not shown to be that reliable. And, you know, a lot of different wallets have been hard to use and maintain because these servers, these Solana servers are just not super reliable. So some of the applications haven't been very reliable either. But hey, new technology, we got to give them a little grace, because it's a good, honest team. I think they got caught up in a lot of bad stuff with FTX and swindled, I think, had some of the wool pulled over their eyes by FTX and Sam and all that whole thing. But
Austin Federa came on. He was a great interview.
Yeah, he was great. I think they've got a lot of really stand-up characters in their organization. So just some technical difficulties. But anyhow, that's kind of what's on my mind. You know, we're still stuck in this trading range for Bitcoin. We could kind of take a quick look at a chart just to see. Let me throw this. Give me a thumbs up if
you
can.
Pull it up on screen.
And if you're listening to the podcast, now's a great time to go to the YouTube, subscribe, and check out Bryce breaking down this chart for you.
That looks insane.
Yeah,
this is like my heartbeat monitor.
Yeah, this is just like a random
slightly regular.
I was pulled up Game of Thrones dragon.
Yeah, I just pulled up like basically a 1 month moving average. You can see like 30-day, 2 month moving average, 60-day, 3 month, 90-day, right? 4 month, 5 months. So these are like a 1 month to a 6 month moving average. And you can see it's like the river of blood, right? This was the bear market. Just nonstop, just down, 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 on every time frame. This obviously was a great time to be a long investor in crypto. You made a lot of money by being long between, you know, May 2020 and May 2021. Basically a year of free money. Quite the opposite was true. But now you can see we've actually had a pretty strong trend reversal where all this red has slowed down and actually started to reverse, right? And so you see a breakout. And this is a long-term breakout, a long-term reversal on pretty much every time frame where you used to have, you know, the 1 month average declining faster than the 2 month, which is declining faster than the 3 month average, which is declining faster than the 4 month. You now have the opposite. You have the 1 month average rising faster than the 2 month average, which is rising faster than the 3 month average. And now you see the 4, 5, and the 6 month average are all kind of tucked here down around $20,000. That makes me think that we could have a little bit of breathing room in this range as we kind of consolidate between $25,000 and $20,000. We let these longer term averages move up. But I'm quite bullish based on just this, you know, this moving average study alone. You very rarely get this sort of behavior in this sort of moving average ribbon without getting some kind of continuation and momentum. You see, we kind of had some positive motion up here, and the Fed really went on their war against inflation. We had a very similar kind of move right up here. Market rallied pretty hard, and then the COVID pandemic happened. So a couple bad moves. You could see right down here, this whole river of blood, and then that very marked trend shift from red to green. You know, it happens throughout Bitcoin's lifespan. Kind of right down here again, big trend shift. And so what I'm thinking is we could either be in this scenario right here, where there's just one last correction to come, or we could actually be on the upswing. I'm kind of more in the camp of we have a little slight correction to come, scare people out one more time, and then make our way higher. But you know, there's so much strong support now in Bitcoin. You can see all this volume that's now been basically cleared out. Now this is all going to be support. So dips are for buying, in my opinion. You can see actually one thing, if we take like the ETH BTC chart, take it on Coinbase, you can see a very, very stable sort of chart. And so this is, Ethereum in terms of Bitcoin, kind of a tight volume point of control. And this has been, for a long time, like the price of Ethereum in terms of Bitcoin has pretty much been stable since May of 2021. Like it hasn't moved anywhere. Now certainly deviated a little bit to the upside, deviated a little downside. But this is gearing up for a big move, which will have pretty big implications. Now a breakout from this range to the upside is going to be a big alt season, right? Where if you have Ethereum that's rising quickly in terms of Bitcoin, you're going to have all the other altcoins rising. So again, you could see this consolidation, this pinch, both in volume profile and in price action. So it's consolidating for a big move. You don't really have much of an edge in terms of these moving averages. See how they're all muddied up? This is just energy consolidating for a breakout one way or another. And so again, a breakout to the upside, you're going to see a lot of altcoins follow. A breakout to the downside, we've got our support down here at about 0.05 ETH, or 0.05 BTC per Ethereum is a support line right here. And in this scenario, you'd probably see stable coins, stablecoin dominance rise, Bitcoin dominance rise, altcoins fall, all that kind of thing. So you're kind of hoping if you're an altcoin holder that this breaks up. And if it starts to break down, you know, you'd probably have a good area to get out. But I mean, this is a pretty long-term consolidation pattern. My money is on this scenario kind of occurring, breaking out to the upside. But hey, the jury's still out.
Bryce, what's the price level that Ethereum needs to hit in terms of Bitcoin to actually flip it in market cap? Is it something like 0.2, somewhere around there? Maybe basically a 4x from here, 3x maybe?
That's a good question, because Bitcoin would be moving as well at that same time. And so right now Ethereum is a $200 billion market cap, and Bitcoin's
about 450.
About 450. And so, you know, if Ethereum doubles and gets it to 400, I don't think that scenario happens if Bitcoin doesn't also go up by, you know, 50% or 75%, right? So
makes sense.
It's a pretty hard game to say, like, this is the exact price point at which it flips. I do think that over the long term, you know, I have been in the camp of the guy who's like, you know, I think that Bitcoin, the market cap of that could be flipped by Ethereum over the long term, because that's, you know, Ethereum, there's a lot more activity, a lot more interest in terms of just like where people are moving money, where people are trading, where the applications are built, NFTs, you know, Coinbase just launched their L2 on top of Ethereum. And not a lot of interesting stuff has been happening on Bitcoin outside of, you know, a lot of really technical things with Taproot and stuff that's, you know, laying the groundwork for a lot of usage and adoption in the future. It just hasn't really gotten that in terms of applications built on top of Bitcoin. But I did see Ordinals, which is cool. NFTs on top of Bitcoin. A lot of people like it. A lot of people don't like it. But it makes it, you know, Bitcoin more of a development platform as opposed to just something that you hold in your wallet and just hold on to and you don't do anything with. I think that's
one other development I think is going to be really big in this next bull run is native Bitcoin is entering DeFi through places like Atomic Dex, Thorchain, and a couple others are going to actually allow you to use your native Bitcoin as collateral in DeFi. So it won't have to just sit in your wallet doing nothing anymore. And that could be a night and day game changer for Bitcoin. Yeah. Because you were able to use it as collateral on all these centralized lending platforms. But now that they're all defunct, essentially, what were you going to do with it? Just hold it in a cold storage? That might be the right thing to do. But now you can start to put it in play again. So that's great for Bitcoin, great for Ethereum, that there's more competition now. So I also wanted to reiterate your point earlier as far as where we're at in the market cycle. I really do think that this past month has been a really big bull trap. And now would probably be a great time to take some profit off the table in altcoins. If you've experienced, you know, 5x, 10x gain out of nowhere, let these things cool down a little bit. I think we're going to have a long summer of accumulation. Accumulation phases are marked by long periods of nothingness. And while we didn't have as much of a distribution phase during our last markdown, there's a lot of people that were caught off sides and are still holding bags. I still think we have quite a long time to go before the available supply is really gobbled up at the best price available and it's time to make it run again. So I think you can probably get a better entry later this year, sometime over the summer maybe, on a lot of coins that you're looking at right now that maybe you're feeling like you missed out on. I with one coin, for example, that I got around 3 cents was TruFi, the TRU token. And I sold that thing at about 5 cents. It's sitting at about 8.5 today. And I'm looking at it like, oh man, you know, this is something I believe in long term. You know, maybe I shouldn't have sold it. Like, no, of course I should have, because I'm following the market cycle in large. I made profit. I took profit off the table. Now I'm going to wait for it to cool down and come back before getting it. I'm not going to pay a premium. And I think that's what just about every other smart trader is thinking right now, as you see really momentum on this upswing starting to die out. And if there is momentum, it's trickling into these long shot coins that are eventually going to, you know, come back down 50% or so. Another thing that's a great example of this is if you look at the Waves chart, Waves USDT, on Binance, for example.
Yeah, which I would never recommend anybody even touch.
Yes, absolutely. Just look at it. Don't touch. This is a museum artifact. Because this thing ripped up to like $60 before the end of the bull run last year and then collapsed down to like two. And this thing was pumped hard and fast like a bomb or a missile just going off. You just knew that this thing was going to come back. So even if you're looking at this thing going $30, $40, $50, like there's no way you want to get in at that time. And I don't even recommend anyone get in at two for that matter, as Bryce, you know, very clearly pointed out. But this is just an example of what happens after the giant pump. It's going to come way, way, way back down, and just be patient. If this is something, if this is happening to a token that you believe in that you want to accumulate, just be patient. I don't think you've missed out yet.
To build on that outside the crypto sphere, the Fed futures funds might raise as well, because there's a lot of interesting data coming out around that, and people are starting to think like, uh-oh, like, you know, maybe inflation's getting a little sticky. So that's a macro thing that might go against it. Just wanted to add that cherry on top as I watch CNBC for the team all day.
Yeah, there we go.
I know you guys got to run. We have a coaching call that you guys got to get to. We're going to wrap it up with our DCS summit, digital currency summit we had next week. We had so many great guests, and it is available for purchase if people are interested, if they missed out. I'm going to link to that in the bio, but you know, who are some of your favorites?
Yeah, we had a couple dozen crypto experts, man. I loved the guys from the TIE. These are, you know, crypto data scientists and experts that have just been delivering crucial research and data to hedge funds and institutions. And they shared a ton of really cool insights about, you know, where the market is right now post FTX, what kind of data, you know, hedge funds are using in order to make killer gains. So we had their CEO, Josh Frank. We had one of their lead data scientist, Eric Sibersky. I thought that was a really cool presentation. I loved talking to Mike Belshi again from BitGo, right? These are a custodian of, I think, about $80 billion. Yes, $80 billion of crypto assets they custody. And so these are like, you know, institutional heavyweights that shared a ton of insight about why they're continuing to build here in the crypto market, why they're more confident than ever that, you know, we're just at a little pause for crypto, but it's not necessarily the end by any means of crypto. So I think that those were a couple of my favorite presentations, what I learned the most about. Pete, what were your favorite takeaways from the DCS?
Well, I'm also a big fan of the TIE. You can find all kinds of information at thetie.io/research that they put that out. They also have the Fundamental Value podcast, which is one of my favorites. I was going to say they're the brains behind my mouth, but that could be interpreted as an endorsement or slander, depending on what mood I'm in. So I'll hold there. But we were really, really appreciative of all that they do for this space. Two of my favorite guests, the first one was William Quigley, the original founder of Tether, also the co-founder of the Wax blockchain.
Yep.
This guy is what a visionary looks like. True. This is what a leader looks like. This is what a smart, successful person sounds like and carries himself like. So if you're new to the space and you want to know who to follow and a blueprint for being successful over and over again, William Quigley is the guy to follow. Completely opposite from whoever the hell the CEO or DAO is behind Meme Land that just spent $1 million of their treasury on some random key to unlock something they don't even know about in a game nobody cares about. Yeah, those are the two polar opposites. Yeah, 1,000 ETH on a game item that no one knows what it does versus William Quigley, the founder of Tether and Wax blockchain. Be careful who you follow. They're not the same. They're not built the same. Another guy who's not built the same is Blockchain Boy, Lucas Demos. He is one of the largest influencers in Gen Z. And it was really a pleasure to speak with him, get to know him, see what his generation's thinking about, what they care about. He's got a few qualities that I really appreciate in a person. One, he's unapologetically himself. Mm-hmm. And two, he has convictions. And he's willing to back up his convictions with logic, research, and thought. And the third one is he wants to make a difference in the world. He really wants to do something positive with his time and his efforts, and the undeniable wealth that he's going to make from those two things. So he's definitely a person to watch, and we'll have him back on in many other DCSs as well.
Good stuff, boys. Well, I'll talk to y'all soon. Pete, I hope you have fun in Denver. Stay safe, all right? Don't do anything.
I'll do my best.
And if you do, be sure to take some
pictures. I will record it. I promise.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.